Welcome to Family by Design, a weekly radio program brought to you by
Wellspring Christian Family Schools,
the education ministry of WCF Church, located in Sebillesville, Maryland. We hope that today, in some way, we will help you to treasure God's design for your family.
Because the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Have you ever thought about going on the mission field as a homeschooling family? Well, we have a broadcast for you today. I'm Joel Fisher, and I'm joined in the studio by pastor and educator Gary Cox. Gary, welcome back.
Hi, good to be here.
And we have our special guest, Rachel Wilson. Welcome back to Family by Design.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Rachel, we've just had a great time the last couple broadcasts talking about your experience as an educator. You have a master's in elementary education, mm-hmm. and you're also experienced as a special ed teacher. You have been in South America. You've been in Africa. You've been in Virginia. you have had the whole experience. And just real briefly, tell us, you've been in Ethiopia for the last several years, and you are headed back to South America. So just give us just a few minutes about where you're headed now as a missionary.
So God is calling me back to Spanish-speaking country, which I'm super excited
didn't
about.
Didn't want to let that Spanish get too rusty.
No. And thank God it's still there. God is going to be transitioning my ministry to work specifically with women and to work alongside the local church to build the women's ministry and do discipleship and training with Ecuadorian women.
Okay, so Ecuador is where you're going to be headed.
Yes.
Next. And time frame for that, when do you anticipate being
hope
back
to
on
be
the field?
I hope to be leaving this summer, sometime okay. This summer.
All right, that is awesome. All right, well, last conversation we had, we were talking about just some of the practical things to consider as a family going on the mission field. And I guess a couple of things we talked about, some of the challenges, and the last kind of part where we left it was just you were sharing some of the opportunities that families have to interact. Generally, if you could speak to, was it your experience that homeschooling families were able to connect well with the local church? And I guess I'm making the assumption, maybe it's a bad assumption, I don't know, making the assumption that there are local believers in some of these places where families are. And how does that connection work, where you have a family that's homeschooling, missionary families homeschooling, and then you have local believers who, you know, maybe don't have that opportunity, or what was some of the interaction there for families?
So a lot of the families I work with, they would be part of sort of like the church plant in that region of Ethiopia. And so they're working alongside the local church, building up the elders, speaking into the elders' lives, running the Bible studies, trying to get leadership to grow in that community. So that, I mean, a good missionary works himself out of a job, you know. So we want to go in there and we want to help them to understand the gospel, get some key pin people there to be speaking into the community and build the church. And then we should be able to leave that place and let them continue with the church themselves. So a lot of the families there would be doing that discipleship and that one-on-one mentoring, but also speaking into the community. I know that one of the families I was working with, they actually helped the people write some songs that they could be singing in the churches, and but they were like traditional songs, not your Western songs that were coming into their culture. So trying to make everything culturally sensitive. In a more urban-like setting, it may be doing theological education or working alongside people in the community and businesses, or just however it is that you can reach the people where they are. Because that's the idea. It's that we don't want to go in with our Western mindset and change them. Right. We want the gospel to change them.
Right. So in your experience, you wouldn't say that homeschooling was so much of a barrier or a hurdle that, because I can imagine some people may be thinking, well, maybe that's going to, you know, give people some sort of idea that we're better than the culture we've come to, and we, you know, we're going to stay here in our little cloister. I mean, it was kind of funny. That's what the same criticism that's leveled, you know, to homeschoolers mm-hmm. here. But in a sense, is there a perception from locals that there's a, you know, we're trying to stay away from you?
No, I think because the locals understand that the children need to have an education in mm-hmm. English, and they need to have an education that's not the same as what their children receive, that they understand why the parents are educating the children themselves. And on the token of, does it impede ministry? No, I think it actually opens up opportunity for more ministry because of the flexibility of homeschooling.
Yeah.
I mean, if you need to go on a countryside evangelism thing for a week, well, you just pack up the books and you go with them.
Right.
You know, the school goes with you instead of school is the place.
Right.
Like, it makes it a lot easier that you don't have to say, well, we have to wait for another break, and then we can go on this trip. That's to me, I love that aspect of homeschooling, because it really does. There's so much flexibility in it.
So yeah, yeah.
You don't have to go. The ministry doesn't come to you. You can go to the ministry.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. So you mentioned that, in a sense, you became like an aunt to a lot of the families. And I guess just to go back to how many families were you working with during, when you were there?
So initially, I started with 12 homeschool families.
Wow.
But by the time I left for this home assignment, there was only one or two left.
Okay.
So they had left for various reasons. Yeah.
Okay, but 12 at one point, 12.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And go ahead and speak to what are some of the unique challenges that you saw as far as the children themselves. If I'm a homeschool, I'm a kid mm-hmm. who's being homeschooled. On the mission field, what are some of the things that, you know, my parents need to be maybe a little more aware of when they're working with me?
Well, that's a good question. Let me think. I mean, every child is so different. And I love one of my colleagues who really helped me to understand homeschooling a lot would say, do it 1 year at a time and one child at a time when it comes to homeschooling. Mm-hmm. So, and I understand this too, because I'm the second of five, you know, and I think that we can easily compare children and think, well, this child can do it. Why can't this child do it? So always look at each child individually, you know, because the moment that we start saying, oh yeah, but your older brother can do it, or your older sister can do it, well, they're not that brother or sister. So, do you want to speak into this,
yeah,
Gary?
Yeah, so I was wondering if you could speak to that little clip you said where you started out with 12, but then you ended with just a couple families left, and you said they left. So did they leave the mission field, or did they left homeschooling, or explain a little bit what happened?
sorry, yeah, let me. They left the field, and some of them left for various reasons, you know, family health, their own health. Some of it was the political unrest in the country, and was it safe to have people in those locations anymore? And some of them, just their time on the field was up. So there's various reasons why, and it was not.
So they basically left the field.
They left the field, yes.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
And are there adequate replacements coming in? That's a lot to lose in a few years.
Currently, right now, SIM Ethiopia is more urbanized central. They're thinking more about the capital city and the growth there and restructuring. So there are a few families that are going outside the capital city, but not as many as there used to be.
OK. Can you think of a time working with families where you had to bring up to mom and dad, hey, like you said, you were able to walk into a room because of the background that you had and see where a mm-hmm. child was struck. So, kind of approach. How did you go about doing that? And how was that difficult? How did families respond to that kind of correction, as it were?
Well, I think it depends on the openness of the of the parents to receive recommendations from somebody else. That's a huge factor. I mean, I've had both positive and negative responses, sure. But I usually would just approach it the way that I used to approach it as a special ed teacher in a classroom. I would observe. I would take notes. I would observe multiple times. And I would work with the child a bit. And then I would approach the parents with it. I wouldn't just drop the bombshell on them that your child needs this or this. Because I wanted to be able to back it up with, this is what I've observed. You know, these are things that could benefit your child. But ultimately, it's up to the parent to decide whether or not they'd like to implement those accommodations.
So really, you were like a missionary to missionaries. You call it educational consultant. But the nice thing about a consultant is you can observe and offer advice and discretionary direction. But you don't have the responsibility to implement it. It's up to them to be, professional, parental, and, prayerful and make those decisions.
Yes. I was responsible, though, to make sure that parents were complying with what their children did need educationally. So if there would have been a major gap or a major thing that needed to happen and the parents weren't complying, then I, of course, was responsible to talk to my superiors about that. Okay, but thankfully, I never had to do that.
Were you still back at that school, at the mission school?
No, this was actually within my organization on the field. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So.
Because, as parents, you are accountable to a higher calling besides, just you. You can't, mm-hmm. I think that's why, Walkersville or
Wellspring. Right?
Wellspring. that's what your intentions are as well, right. is to be that people to say, well, I'm holding you accountable, making sure your kids are getting what they're getting, right.
So I don't know the SIM network entirely, but I do know that's one of the benefits of belonging to mm-hmm. a missionary society, so that they can set some guidelines, standards, baselines. So if a family begins to fall below those baselines, basically the mission can say, well, this may be a time where you need to step off the field for a while and get some things in order. But it's an amazing thing. A proper kind of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
It's a genuine kind of ministry.
Yeah. So, and that's why I joined an organization, because I knew I was doing long-term missions and I wanted that accountability. And I think that's God's standard as well. He doesn't just want us to go out there and do whatever we want to do and hope we're doing it okay. Like, we need to be able to say to somebody, I'm doing this. Is this okay? And if I'm not, then guiding them in the correct way. And that was it. It's a huge responsibility that I did not take it lightly. I held it to a high standard. And my families knew that. But I think the thing that helps with being able to go in and have hard conversations if needed is the fact that I first built relationships with the parents, with the children, and with the family. So it wasn't like the police woman coming in to correct them. It was, hey, this is Miss Rachel, who loves us, who loves you. And ultimately, I don't want your child to fail. I want them to have a successful education, because if it doesn't go well, then potentially the family might have to leave the field too. Families leave the field for all different reasons. We don't want it to be educationally. So I was kind of like that net. That before they just fell, I could catch them and say, let's try this first.
Now the listeners may be interested to know that thanks to you and our contact with you in 2014, you brought us into contact also with SIM, and we did some initial exploration of how we might come alongside homeschoolers in the mission. And and walk with them and work with them. And one of the issues that we were trying to resolve initially was how can we establish, you know, the baseline target. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we drew up a preliminary program for the missionaries, and then it got floated, you know, among whatever you floated mm-hmm. among an SIM.
Powers that be. Or
people, yeah, yeah. But in my next visit with them, when I, you know, step two, they just kind of grinned and said, well, I'm sure you already know this, but missionaries are pretty much all type A personalities. And it's a, you have to come in there with your ideas or whatever, with carefulness and kid gloves mm-hmm. and respect for the reality that they're not on the mission field except because they have that gift and that calling and that, yeah. that willingness to go. So that was quite interesting. So I know for a fact, just so the listeners know, SIM has never bullied homeschool parents. They do have a basic
yes.
health, you know, health of the family baseline for what kind of things need to take place. But let me ask you a critical question here, if I have time.
Yeah, you're good. You're
so earlier you talked about, you know, some of the decisions that you make targeting college, and I don't remember if that was a private conversation we had before we went on air, if it was on the air, but you know, it is true. I mean, as far as our program goes, you know, once a young person starts to get into high school, we really suggest that there's a variety of ways that you can utilize your high school career legitimately from a spiritual perspective and adequately from, you know, part of our accountability is mm-hmm. Regulation and law for education in America. So there's different ways of doing that. But it's important to sort of be prayerful and have an understanding, well, where do we think our target is? Where are we going? Mm-hmm. And I noticed you mentioned at one point, you know, the missionaries have a greater sensitivity to, you know, having their kids come back and being able to go to university. But now I'm just going to throw in some of my, you know, warped ideas here that are contradictory to culture. But my opinion is that mandatory college attendance is like the new slavery. I mean, unless you have full paid scholarships, it's easy with partial scholarships to come out of college with $100,000 debt just for college. Now, you know, minimum wage jobs aren't going to pay for that, mm-hmm. and a huge, huge number of students coming out of American universities are having difficulty getting any kind of a job. And plus, colleges are not really thoughtful of students, that they want a student in there because they want the cash flow in. So it's a money-making mm-hmm. enterprise. And so many students fail to really have a target. You know, why am I in school at all? And, you know, obviously, if you want to become a medical doctor or, you know, a lawyer or whatever, an engineer, you know, there's certain fields that you don't have a choice mm-hmm. but to get an adequate education. But it still doesn't necessarily mean that you have to run up $100,000 debt. But how prevalent on the mission field is the standard university versus a sensitivity to, you know, filling up the moment of the opportunity and, you know, having God direct steps in a unique way? And that's a really vague second option against yeah. college.
No, I think that... Yeah, I understand that. I mean, when I graduated from college, it took me 15 years to pay off my school loans. And that's actually what prevented me from signing with a mission board right away because I had to get my debt down to a basic level because mission organizations don't want you going into on the field with a lot of debt. And I think parents are aware of that debt because most of them have experienced it themselves. And so I think... parents now are starting to think of different options. I haven't interacted a lot with high school families, like families with high school kids, but at the same time, there are a few that I have, and they will make that transition from the mission field back to the States maybe a year or two earlier so that the child can get a residency in a state, and then the child that will help with in-state tuition, but also... a lot of times kids are going to community college now for the first couple years. And so maybe they might go live with a relative or even the family will transition off the field, which I think that happens a lot, that when the oldest child will reach, you know, college level, a lot of families do transition off the field for that reason, to be there with their kids during that those first years when those kids are official adults. So, and then talking to students, because they don't have the option, like, I could get a job at age 16 and start saving money for college, even though it was like enough to pay for two textbooks. Right. But you don't have that option when you're living overseas. So it is still teaching your kids things about budget, still teaching your kids about what are the different options. You know, you don't have to go to the $60,000 a year school if you can get the same for community college price, you know, the first couple years or so. So, and then thinking about the different scholarships that are out there, letting the kids apply to those. If they're able to do sports programs, if at all possible, sometimes they can get a sports scholarship. Again, that depends on how close they are tied to the capital city. But those are important discussions to have with your children, starting probably when they're ninth grade. I wouldn't wait until they're like juniors and be like, right. Okay, so yep. What do you want to do for college next year or 2 years? You should be starting those dialogues early on. Have the kids research. Have them look at the cost of college and help them understand that, yeah, if you go here 4 years, this is how much you're going to owe at the end. You go to this other place for 4 years. I remember having that discussion with my oldest niece, who's now in college. Like, don't pick that school. It's too expensive. Go to a cheaper school where you're going to learn the same thing for a third of the price.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, just like you think about all the different resources that are out there whenever you're on the mission field, it's educating your children when they're coming back to the States and kind of teaching them how to be an adult here. Like, what is the sensible thing to do? Because you don't want to get in all this unnecessary debt. Trade schools are a great option as well. Not everyone's meant to go to a 4-year college or a 2-year college. So letting them know that there are options out there, I think.
Yeah. Quick question for you, just to wrap up to kind of this topic. Now you got to see a lot of students grow up, and so looking at amongst the students you work with, did you see a lot of graduates from missionary families? Did they have an interest in coming back on the field at some point? Was that something that they wanted to prepare for based on their experience? What was, what was the trajectory for a lot of these kids?
So I can speak into the kids that I taught in Paraguay because they are now in the early
right.
20s.
Right. Well, still have to see the Ethiopian guys.
So I have to wait a few more years about the kids from Ethiopia. But I have seen a lot of missionary kids become missionaries themselves as adults. Or if they're not necessarily going out to the field, they're mobilizing or somehow working in missions to – and they use their stories, you know, they use their experiences, mm-hmm. which is the greatest recruitment tool ever for missions.
Right.
You know, and I know that not every missionary kid has a great experience, you know, and it breaks my heart to hear about that. And I've talked to so many adult missionary kids and I've apologized because they didn't have a great time and they didn't have a great experience. And we know some of them fall away from the faith. I mean, we know that just from people here in the States.
Right.
Go to church their whole life and they still fall away from their faith.
Right.
But I think that, yeah, some do. Some actually do go back to the field and as adults and end up taking their kids. I've seen some third and fourth generation missionary families.
So I guess maybe it's too soon to say this, but do you think being homeschooled as a missionary kid has... would you say it's more likely that they are more interested in coming back just based on that experience than not? Or is that is the jury still on it?
I don't know if I have enough evidence to support that.
Right.
But I would say if they, it's like anything in life. If you have a good experience, it makes you think like, well, this could be a positive experience later on in life. So, I mean, as parents of homeschoolers, just listen to your children, you know,
and 30 seconds. 30
and be,
seconds.
Be the best observers that you can be.
So, 30 seconds. Talk to the missionary family who's on the mission field. And they are homeschooling. And they're full-fledged experiencing everything relating to homeschooling and the mission field. 30 seconds. Speak to them something encouraging that would help them just gain a little bit of perspective so they can have a little increase in vision, a little lightness in burden. And 30 seconds. That's all you got left.
To the parents, I would say, remember what God has called you to. Remember, God has called you to be husband and wife, and he's called you to be parents. And that's the highest calling that you will ever have. And through that, you get to be ambassadors of Christ. And so, although you may feel like you won't always do it right, remember that there's grace for each other, and God gives you grace. You won't always get the culture right, but that's okay because you're not from that culture. So continue to love and serve wholeheartedly. In your periods of doubt, look up instead of looking in or looking around, but look up. And I bet you somewhere around the world, somebody is praying for you because you are in the hearts of many, many people around the world.
Amen. Thank you so much. That's wonderful.
Thanks, Rachel. It for our conversation today. We're going to come back one more time with Rachel. If you've missed any of the previous broadcasts, you can go to our website, wcfs.edu. Click on the Resources tab. You'll find Family by Design, and you can hear our previous broadcasts. On behalf of everybody here at Family by Design and Wellspring Christian Family Schools, I'm Joel Fisher, hoping you'll join us next week right here, where we'll continue to treasure God's design for your family.
Thanks for spending your time with us today here at Family by Design. Join us every Sunday when we will continue this wonderful journey, helping you to treasure God's design for your family.
'Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Someday the house will crumble. Time will turn the land to dust. And when all accounts are empty, where will you invest their trust?
But if the riches that you give them is the wisdom of his ways, then the wealth you'll leave your children will last through all their days. 'Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus. Is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving.
People grieve differently.
Jill is a counselor who lost her 21-year-old daughter.
And if you can't understand how the other person is grieving, or you want them to grieve like you, it can be very difficult. In one sense, it's like two empty cups trying to fill each other.
Understanding these facts can help you find hope after the death of a loved one. For a free booklet on grief, call 800-999-3534 from the Mennonite Churches.